Blog Talk Radio.
Wizardy, we are back. Let's go. Okay, everybody, the call-in number is 929-477-2759. You got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with the chefs. I can't wait to get into the show. There's a lot of stuff to kick into. We are opening the doors to the Crossover Cafe. I'm feeling some type of way from East to West Coast. We got y'all. Calling in is my co-host, my brother, Arkeezy. How are you feeling, Mr. King?
Yo, I'm feeling good, Timeless, man. So excited to be back in the kitchen, ready to get this thing kicked off. What's good, baby? Let's do it.
I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped inside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. And I love this slogan because it goes right to where I'm going. If I done took off the blazer, well, I'm about to put on a blazer and talk about the new news in the kitchen. And oh, yes. I used to have a heckler that I used to call in here, but he would talk his stuff, a.k.a. Mike from Pittsburgh, Mike from PA, and would talk about Carmelo this, Carmelo that. I did not want to hear about Carmelo at that point in time. He was having a hard time getting a job or finding a roster to become a part of. Well, guess what? He is on a roster. He is out there in the West Coast. He's in the Western Conference where all of the trees and all the talent is, basically, to me. I mean, it's talent all up and down the NBA, but I know where the trees are. And that's in the Western Conference, and Carmelo is on the Blazers. So I done put this blazer back on, and he's alongside now with Damian Lillard and my favorite, one of my top three favorite crossover artists in the league, and shooters as well, and C.J. McCollum. Your thoughts on the situation with Carmelo, you know, picking up a deal right now. I don't know if you want to jump into, you know, the entirety of the deal, how much he's pulling in, because I think it's somewhere near like $15,000 a game or something. I'm not sure everything, but this isn't the normal Carmelo money. I just know that he's happy that he's gotten a job. And just seeing him, you know, take the humble route and be grateful for what he's gotten right at this point. But I don't want to take away everything that you're going to throw out here, but let's talk about Carmelo Anthony being a part of the Blazers roster.
Yeah, let's get into, you know, Carmelo Anthony. I guess I have mixed emotions, Timeless. You've heard me each time we talked about Carmelo. I was absolutely flat out okay with him moving on with his life and transitioning. I mean, after about 17 years of NBA basketball, 25 years, I heard Melo say in an interview today that his life has been around playing basketball. Well, those numbers signify to me that maybe it's okay to move on. But Carmelo, as he's admitted to, again, on numerous occasions, that mentally he wasn't quite ready to walk away from the game, and he was just waiting and looking for the right opportunity. It appears that, you know, the Portland Trail Blazers liked what they saw. But whatever conversations that they had, based on some, you know, like I said, some footage that I observed of Carmelo speaking, this was the right fit. Both teams, you know, both parties of this, rather, are being transparent. Is all on the table, so he knows what to expect for the most part. And so he said he was humbled by the entire situation and is just ready to play. So at this point, Timeless, I'm ready to just watch and observe. I'm going to reserve, you know, serious criticism and judgment until he has more games in the bag. Because anytime you've been away from NBA basketball for 369 days of playing an NBA game, and from observation of him seeing it and then playing in it, he's admitted the game has changed since he actually last played an NBA game. So I'm going to reserve significant criticism until he has more games in the bag, but it's good to see Melo back and happy doing what he wants to do.
And now this is very interesting because I myself have mixed emotions about Carmelo Anthony and, you know, with him departing, being released by the Rockets last season, at the beginning of the season and coming into the season and nobody wanting him. And before they get through the end of November, he ended up picking up a spot or landing a spot with the Blazers. And I more or less, I don't want to just say I circle it toward it, but with the loss of Collins, with Collins going down, ended up Carmelo getting a call or a shot to get back into the league. But this is where I feel a certain way about Carmelo, good and bad, and I don't know how people want to weigh it. But the one thing about Carmelo that I'm looking at is he had to take so long to get out of New York, like basically saying that he wanted a no-trade clause and everybody was looking at the scenario of him not wanting to leave New York. And then once it got real bad in New York, he's like, let's get out of here. And then he gets out of New York, has the one-year run with the Thunder, and then this is where everybody's seen it on a like a broad scale. Like people would, you know, heckle at it or pick at it like, you know, Carmelo don't play defense. Like if you go the other way, Carmelo not playing D or he won't pass the ball, so on and so forth. But when he got with the Thunder, they made a playoff bid and played Utah. Everybody was going at him. Even, you know, Rubio was calling for the ball like just so he could run around Carmelo and get to the goal. You know, and just looking at Billy Donovan and the front office, knowing that they had to get rid of Carmelo, feel comfortable or confident with him on the defensive side of the ball. The same instance happened in Houston, and I'm like, I don't know if somebody's going to pick him up if they're releasing him in the month of November. He was released the same month last year, missing the season in its entirety. Nobody wanted to pick him up. Now, I'm going to be honest, because everybody here knows me. I got a heart. You know what I'm saying? So I don't like to see people out there on the streets. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to see them out there working and being able to do something, and let alone when they're at the end of their career. Not to just say I want to see a farewell tour, but I want to see their last shot or the last game that they played, how much they scored or the effort that they gave. Give me something to remember. And it really was looking like nobody was going to give Carmelo any type of opportunity to go out there and showcase himself, to go out there and play. No team. No team wanted to take a shot at him. So now you get the situation where Carmelo has gotten a call. He's with Portland. But here goes the interesting thing now. They lose their first game out of the gate, and he's playing the game tonight in an interesting matchup up against the Bucks, where everybody's watching the MVP and the Greek Freak, and it's looking like he's a constant 30-10 every night. I think he's on a streak right now. I'm pretty sure it's like four or five games. I got to look at the number of how many games he put together of 30-10. But back to the Carmelo situation, with him coming back out, I don't know if this is a farewell tour. I don't know how they put this together, but I just want to see Carmelo go out there and compete. You know, just go out there and get his shot up. And if he can contribute any, and I'm going to be fair, if he can contribute anywhere to 12 to 16 points a night, which I think I'm pushing it by saying 16, just to get him 12 a night, that'll be good. Because, you know, Dame will get you like 25. CJ can get you anywhere from like 18 to 20. Like, and I'm just ballpark guessing. I can look up their averages if I need to. But if Carmelo can get them a solid 10 to 12 points a game, I think this helps. And they'll figure out the defensive efficiency on the other side of the ball, I know, down the road. But it's man-up defense, so he will get exposed in certain situations out there. But I'm happy to see that Carmelo did get a job. He is on the Blazers. The Blazers are on the outside looking in right now. Anything that you'd like to add to it, or we can talk about the Blazers and where they stand right now in the Western Conference also?
I mean, well, one thing's for certain, Thomas. This Portland Trail Blazers team is they're struggling, and they're struggling mightily. And I attribute it personally. My observation is that it's health. It's the reason that, in my honest estimation and opinion, that Carmelo received the phone call. And sometimes it's right place, right time, next man up. And they, the Portland Trail Blazers, look, they moved on from a number of small forward, power forward players via free agency or trade. You know, Al-Farouq Aminu's down in Orlando. Mo Harkless is with the Clippers. Yusuf Nurkic is still, you know, doing his rehabilitation, trying to get back and get on the court. I might be missing somebody else, but, you know, bottom line is their front court is depleted. And so you now have Hassan Whiteside, who actually missed tonight's contest for at least the last three or four contests. He was questionable and probable. He's been nursing some kind of foot sprain. Add on top of that, Dame Lillard, I think, has missed the last couple of games. He's dealing with something that off the top of my dome has escaped me. And then you got new faces, Todd. You got new faces and new places, and it's a new system. And, look, we say it over and over again here at the Cafe, the Western Conference is flat out tough. There are no nights off, and no one gives a damn. You know, like, ain't nobody going to take it easy on you just because you got some guys out or your guys are hurt. They know that they got to come for you because there's blood in the water. That being said, this opportunity in front of Carmelo Anthony is not about how many points per game he can average or score. These players are a lot faster. It's a lot quicker. Again, he's aware of it. He's admitted it. From what I saw in game one, he attempted to be the old Melo a little bit in terms of some post-ups, you know, trying to get going, and he learned very quickly. These guys are longer and quicker, and they're defending the rim. So even though you might outweigh them, you might be able to bully ball them, you know, a little bit, the referees are allowing for a lot more physicality. So that being said, you know, if I'm the Trailblazers and I'm trying to, you know, work Melo in and get him going so he can provide some scoring, you know, Melo's got to get his shots up from the perimeter. I mean, I think Melo's success is going to be from behind the three-point line and mid-range shots and, you know, getting Melo involved in pick and roll. Melo's got to set some screens and he's got to roll to the basket because I think that might be the only way he really gets to the line and not what we've been accustomed to in traditional Carmelo Anthony fashion in previous seasons. So, look, right now they're without Dame, so Melo is waiting for Dame so he can really get a full complement of what's happening. And then you got Whiteside who's got to get healthy. Zach Collins has got to get back. This Portland Trailblazer team is struggling. They're on the outside looking in, and I don't know what it's going to take other than getting healthy and somebody, anybody, get on the roll and get the cooking in a significant fashion, like when it matters most. Like they're playing the Milwaukee Bucks right now. They're making a run. It's 114-108 in favor of Milwaukee in Milwaukee. If the Blazers can pull off the win on the road, that would be tremendous for this Trailblazer team, and it'd be a big boost and lift to Carmelo Anthony's return to the NBA and his ego.
And here goes an interesting thing, too. In this week, too, they just released Pau Gasol, another big that was there. They released him and more or less looking at him as a role for, like, coaching opportunity. So I want to see how that, you know, looks for them moving forward. But as for now, this is all a work in progress with this Portland Trailblazer team. I don't know how to feel about it right now because they're guard heavy at this point, just like Roy said, they're depleted up front. But they do have pieces. I'm just so concerned about, like, Hassan Whiteside because I feel like the Miami Heat won when they got rid of him, bringing Myers Leonard down there. And look at the success the Heat has had now. And I don't want to put this on Whiteside's back. I don't feel like it's fair. But with him going there, it's not like they made a turn. And just like I said previously, and I know you guys heard me in the kitchen, there'll be games where you see Hassan Whiteside come up with a 22-20 game and 22 and 20 and 11 blocks or something like that. Then next thing you know, it's like 5 points and 7 rebounds and a block. And it's like, wait, what happened, man? So it's like, I don't know how to feel about this Blazer team. I like Dame's game. And ever since I met Royce woke me up to Dame Lillard. And ever since then, we just rode that roller coaster. But I've been on the CJ McCollum since he came out. It's like, I feel like they're a piece or two away. And all of these guys are going to have to make their way from being injured, getting the NBA game shape, and then being able to contest in the tough Western Conference. Like, all of that has to happen on the go right now. So I don't know who to put this on or how to point the finger. I don't want to put any – or I don't want to put too much of this on Coach Stotts. You know what? I'll be fair. I'm going to blame Shaquille O'Neal. That's it. Shaq, you did it this summer. Put your rap song out there. And you want to talk about Damian Lillard, I'm putting this all on your back, Shaq. How about that? Tell me how my – no, I ain't going to do it. Okay. No, go ahead. Say what you're going to say, Bruce. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you.
I got somebody else we can blame really quickly. I'm doing this just because I just realized I had some hot sauce in my pocket. So I'm ready to blame, you know, the front office. And look at this situation. And I'm agree with my man Charles Barkley and say it's time to break this team up. The duo.
Man,
it's not working. It's not working. How many years has C.J. McCollum been in the league running next to Dame Lillard? Okay.
I think it's five. I think it's five.
It's got
to
be six. It feels like six or seven to me. And regardless, if it's five, well, that's the number of greats. It's time to move along. You know what I'm saying? And because they need a significant trade. Of a quality player that's going to bring back somebody who can contribute and make a difference that can bring the points, but definitely, as we've been talking about this team, the defensive side of the ball, somebody who can play D and will score the ball. I don't care if it's a prospect, somebody. What I mean by prospect, I mean a guy who's playing a role on another team where there's maybe one or two people in the pecking order ahead of him, and he's like the third option, or he's just getting his without running plays. For example, a guy like Jonathan Isaacs in Orlando comes to mind. Or, you know, I don't – because he plays D, and he's a wing. And there has to be some kind of relationship there between Portland and Orlando, you know. So I don't know. You can say I'm starting trouble or whatever you want to say, but yeah, the Dame CJ show is, yeah, it's time to move on. I've seen enough.
Portland, well, by the way, if I'm looking at this right, he's in his seventh season right now. He was drafted in 2013. He played the 2013-14 season, so 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, 19. This is the 2020 season, so 2019-2020. So this is his seventh season. Portland, I was in the same boat, mad as ever at Royce King when he was doing this to Oklahoma City, and sure enough, all of the pieces fell into play the same way he said it. They got rid of every single body on my roster, and I really wanted to just get anywhere he was, whether he was in Indiana, whether he was in Delaware. If he wanted to be anywhere in the world, I was going to come out there and strangle him. So I know how y'all feel. I wouldn't want to see him blown up. I don't want to see CJ Dame leave because I like the tandem. I'm not going to lie. I love the tandem, but if there is smoke, there is smoke. And with these guys, with the game that they play, they're sitting at the bottom of the Western Conference, and I don't know how it gets better on the fly. That's the one thing I'm thinking about. But we do have Naj in the building. Naj, welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm good. What up, gentlemen?
What up? Naj is like,
you know, trying to get it. You know how it is, man. As soon as I get off, I start getting phone calls from people who I never hear from. Like, yo, can your timing be any worse? I got to get in here and cook up something with the chefs, man. Like, you know how it is, man. But, yeah, getting into Portland, man. Like, y'all hit on everything. The CJ Dame combo, yeah, that's going to be hard to win with. Not only because there's just certain limitations on it, but if you trade CJ, you're going to get a player of lesser value, or you're going to get a guy who has potential but is not ready for you to really do anything with Dame in his prime. So you kind of got the worst of it all in that last year, winning that playoff series in spectacular fashion made people think you were better than what you were, and I think it made the organization think they were further along. It's like, no, you won a playoff series. You're not a real contender. And now we're looking at this team and you're saying, okay, how did they get better? If Nurk comes back, is he that much better than what Hassan is giving you right now? Like, can you play any different with Nurk than you couldn't with Hassan? I don't think so. You know, the smorgasbord of Hood and Joseph and all those guys, they've been so bad that you signed Melo. And that's no knock on Melo. I think Melo could actually kind of turn this into 2 years possibly playing. If he gets out there, kind of assesses the speed of the game, figures out what he can and can't do, there's a possibility where he can play for another, you know, for another year or so. Because, look, you're not asking him to be an all-star. You're just asking him to be a rotational player. And once expectations are lowered and people stop this hysteria of Melo watch every night, because like the other night where people were posting the plus-minus when he was on the floor and off the floor, you're like, you're going to do that for the first game? This guy just got on the team, which is already bad, and you're going to put the losing on him? Like, that's crazy. So Melo just needs a legit chance, and I mean from fans. Like, fans got to calm down. This is going to be, you know, like, this is it, this year and maybe next year. But you're not expecting him to come in and be his old former self. You're expecting him to come in and be a contributor, and I think he can. But that doesn't take them anywhere, because the essential problem is your two superstars. Dame is like the lowest tier of superstar, and CJ is not really a superstar, but he's paid like one. So you're just in a tough predicament.
Both of them. Look at the dishes that I put together, and these dudes are cooking. I don't want to see it happen, but both of them are about to split y'all up. Portland, like, if y'all feel some type of way, y'all better come in here and get these dudes, because they are in front of a stove, and you guys are about to be burned. Okay, so speaking of which, unless you guys have anything else left to talk about Portland, they want to blame everybody else. Shaquille O'Neal, I'm blaming you, Shaq. It's all your fault. It's all your fault. Okay, so speaking of two superstars, since it was addressed with two superstars, we now have in Los Angeles, and I want to say on the other side of Los Angeles, I don't care how you look at it, but it's being played in the Staples Center. The team with the red, white, and blue jerseys have finally got both of their stars or superstars. I don't know how you guys want to look at it, because some people don't want to give Paul George the superstar edge, at least people I know. But I'll give Kawhi that edge. But I just say stars for now. The two stars have finally played their first game together, being PG, Paul George, and the Claw, a.k.a. Kawhi, getting their first action last night up against the Boston Celtics, where this game actually went into overtime. And the thrills were there. The defense finally got the lock in, and they looked like a true presence in the Western Conference, which I didn't doubt, especially with the roster assembled. And with one of the more unguardable people in the league, like I love to say, and I say this all the time, the rest of Lou Williams. But I want to see how you guys feel about these guys finally getting their first play together. And they look like they balanced the court so well playing opposite of each other. But going up against a tough Boston Celtics team who can't be overlooked, it was a good game last night. I want to see how you guys feel about it. Royce, I'll come to you first. Your thoughts on the powerhouse in red, white, and blue in Los Angeles.
Well, I'm not going to be before you long on this. They looked like I kind of expected them to look once fully healthy, that the ball was going to move, guys was going to get open shots. It was just a matter of what is it really going to look like. Here's what I'm imagining in my mind, that they're better. They've got weapons. They've got defense. They've got penetration. They've got guys you got a double. They've got a post presence. They've got rebounding. They got guys who can get to the free throw line at a high volume collectively as a team. So you're talking about beating opponents into the bonus. You're talking about beating opponents on the glass. And then you got three guys, in my opinion, who are just flat out clutch when it's time to close out a game. So you got three clutch options. You can go with the one that's been there in red, white, and blue, and Lou Williams as the closer. Or you could go with Paul George. Or you could go with Kawhi Leonard. Pick your poison. That being said, I think what everybody's been watching in Golden State, while this doesn't and will not look like Golden State's version of dominance, I think at some stretch during this season, we're going to see Clipper dominance and the ball's going to move, but it's just going to, you know, aesthetically appear differently, but it's nonetheless is going to be effective to see the ball start at, like, you know, top of the circle, table side, kicking in almost to like the elbow or free throw line, you know, to Zubac, and then kick it opposite sideline for a wide open three. I saw them do that like a number of times, and I expect to see that over and over again. And that's just easy offense. Like, nobody was home guard, Paul George or Kawhi Leonard. They took turns. So this is going to be a good team. I expect them to go pretty far. And but they'll be judged by what they actually accomplished in the postseason, with all that being said.
Naj, your thoughts on the Clippers and how you feel about the tandem being together and the supporting cast?
Yeah. I'm with Royce. There were no surprises yesterday. That's a talented team with a lot of interchangeable parts. Kawhi and Paul George play unselfishly, which kind of makes it more difficult to deal with them. Because they're going to do a lot of draw and kick, and they're going to create a lot of – how you doing? My bad. They're going to create a lot of situations to where you kind of – you're in a dilemma. Paul's curling off the screen, and he wants to dive down the lane. You don't want to give him that, but you also don't want him flaring out for a clean look at a three. Kawhi's – like, you always have to pay attention to Kawhi, because not only will he crash the boards, but he's just so damn physical, man. It's hard to have a good matchup for him and have another plus, you know, plus one defender that's going to be able to deal with George. Like, how many teams have two lockdown wing guys that can deal with them on a nightly basis, not to mention when Lou comes in? And now you got Lou in a matchup he likes. So as long as they shoot well, this is what they're going to look like. But there are going to be games where Patrick Beverley doesn't play above his head and they can't get a three to fall, and they're just relying on defense, and they're going to get beat. So inside, as far as Zubac, just a guy. There are going to be nights when Harrell doesn't win his matchup, and there are going to be nights when Harrell almost gets, like, 35 points, and they're just running everything through him. So they're going to be a problem, man. The interesting thing from that game to me was Boston. All of the problems we talked about were right there for you. They don't have a superstar player who can close the show. They play well together. They're a really good unit. But if I decide to put Kawhi on Kemba and Paul George defends Tatum well, I mean, they don't have answers. Brad and his whiteboard can't fix that. So at a certain point, man, Boston, I think that was more telling to me. They've been together all season. They got guys – Clippers have guys in and out of the lineup, and they still just – you know, kind of squeeze you the way that they did. The Celtics sets should have been cleaner than the Clippers set. And I think we saw the opposite, which is kind of scary because the Clippers got a lot of time to improve on, you know, what they look like offensively.
But now, do you think that's just the difference between maybe the East and West? I mean, because the little bit that I saw, I was actually thinking a little bit differently about it, in that the version of Jason Tatum, you know, that showed up last night, I'm like, can you be this guy like night in and night out? I mean, did I miss something? I mean, I thought he had a good game, and you know, I thought he was big in certain spots, but I don't know that Coach Stevens, you know, trust him like you said to go ahead and develop him as the closer, as the go-to guy, because, I mean, look, he has some size and some length where I want my closer to not be, how do I say this, height challenge, if you will. I mean, I don't want Kemba being my closer. You trying to get in the paint and you giving up 5 inches, brother.
Facts.
So
no, the point you make about Tatum stands, man. I think they're slowly trying to give him that. And, yeah, he did look good. You know, I wasn't saying that he was bad the other night. It's just, to me, he seems like the young guy who's on his way, who, you know, they slapped on the butt after the game, like, yeah, good. Remember how LeBron told Luka, man, you a bad mama, you're going to be a prop. You know what I mean? I feel like that's how Kawhi and PG look at Tatum as the next up-and-coming guy, but I don't think they believe he's there yet. He's got to take that from them.
Swart City, I apologize if I'm like getting real mad at Nas because he's like in my pot, in my plate. Like I got stuff down the road that I'm trying to put together, and he's all in these dishes. Okay. And the interesting thing about the Celtics too is don't forget that they did lose Gordon Hayward, but for some odd reason, this Celtics team gets better as somebody goes down, like yearly, like and Gordon Hayward has gone down twice. Kyrie went down, was that 2 years ago, I want to say, and they still, you know, survived and played decent ball. But you're right, and I mean, you don't want to start turning this thing into a Kemba Walker trying to close up, because then it'll look like the same thing that happened with him down there in Charlotte. And, I mean, they've had their bit of success this season, so I can't overplay what they have been able to do up until this point, but it has to be consistent. And knowing that Brad Stevens is more of a team coach, it's not – I really think that he's built his team systematically. I don't think he has a team that's set to have a star just stand out and be like, give me the ball, everybody clear out. I mean, Kyrie has that capability. I mean, Kemba could get his shot. You can think of players that can make their shot at the end of the day, but I don't know. I think this is more or less whoever has the ball when it's the right shot, take the shot. I mean, Marcus Smart can get the shot if he wants to too. So, and it's early. It is the Eastern Conference, and I feel like they will be one of the top four teams if they continue to play the way that they're playing and don't fall completely off course. But
yeah,
I just like
remember,
the way that
Thomas, my critique on them is a championship critique. They're still a top three team in the East. They're going to have home games right in the playoffs. We expect that. I'm talking about when they get to the Eastern Conference Finals and everything else, because I look at that team as on that level. So when I make that, you know, the critique that I'm making, I'm talking about if they want to be in that conversation with the Clippers, the Lakers, and, you know, the other teams who we feel like are championship stuff, they got to figure this thing out.
I didn't think that was that kind of season for them this year. I don't see that for them this year.
Mm.
I mean, I just didn't. I mean, I didn't see them getting off to such a great start either, right? In terms of how they responded to, like, first game in the regular season, you lose to Philly, okay, and then you just run off 10 straight. Like, I didn't see that coming, but neither do I really see this particular crop of Boston Celtics as playing towards, you know, contention. I felt like this particular roster, even though they moved some pieces around, that bringing in Kemba Walker did not, you know, signal to me like we're going for it. It still, to me, was, okay, we kind of addicted to having some star power or somebody who's, like, ready, that's a draw right now, while we still figure out, are we in the trade market with Brown, Tatum, and you know, the other young guys, or are we shifting low key to a rebuild without it being a painful rebuild? So championship contention, I just never thought that about this particular, you know, season.
I think Danny thinks so. I think Brad thinks so.
I need to call Danny and tell Danny you better get on the damn phone and make some trades, because you got problems too. It ain't
right.
Ready, bro. Like, this league, there are teams that are close, but they are not ready, and there has to be a fury of trades for all these pretenders to become contenders. That's my opinion. That's my assessment.
Right. And then when Gordon comes back, you still got to figure out that logjam with Gordon, because Gordon was playing at his Utah Jazz level, and everybody was excited, and then the injury happens. So
they definitely not in the same boat as the Trailblazers, though. They healthier than them right now, and with a better record.
Yes, sir.
And speaking of which, that game has come to an end. The Milwaukee Bucks have won that game 137-129, in which Carmelo had 29 minutes of play. He finished with 18. CJ went off for 37 and 10 assists. CJ damn near had a triple-double. He was 4 rebounds short of a triple-double. CJ was trying to make that magic happen. I just want them to play consistent, like him and Dame, and now they got Carmelo. If they could put that together, that I would love that. But
DJ trying to get his trade
stock up. Look at Royce is selling you down the river. CJ, well, if that's the case, bring Cal to the Midwest, the south part of the Midwest, that state that sits on top of Texas. Yeah, go on down there, please. I need a trigger man. I need a shooter now. I'll give up Andre Roberson and Terrence Ferguson right now. You're going to have both of them.
No, you're going to have to send Steven Adams.
That might work. All three of them in a package. Steven Adams, Andre Roberson,
Hold on, Thomas. You got to ask for Anthony Simmons. If they want you to take that money, then you got to get one of the young guys, too. You got to get Nasir Little or Anthony.
I'm wishlisting. I'm going along with more systematic here. You know what I'm saying? Like just trying to hope that the trade will go through. You know what I'm saying? You know,
right.
Just hoping. But
Carmelo playing 29 minutes is kind of an indictment of your roster. He should not walk on your team and play 29 minutes in the second game and be required to be one of the anchors to score. That kind of lets you know where they are. And the CJ thing, the problem with CJ is, you can't get back what he's worth, but you also can't get to where you need to get with, you know, that kind of cap hit for a guy who's a number two. He's a number three dressed as a number two. I mean, there's no other way I can put it. And I'm not knocking him in saying that.
I feel that way. I feel like that's a knock. Cause CJ could hit, man. I mean, he was 15 for 29, 5 for 10 for 3. He was hitting. Boy, this boy was on fire tonight. He was on fire, and this is the most I can't overlook the fact that they went on the way. This was in Milwaukee. It wasn't like they played in the Rose Garden, but that's not what they call it now. But they were in Milwaukee, and he had a comfortable game, but they ended up losing this one by 8. But I agree with you also with saying that if he's on this team, being Carmelo, and they had him play damn near the whole game. I mean, he's 18 minutes away from playing the whole game. I mean, he got a good amount of time out there. My question is built within me on what's going on here other than, you know, Whiteside sitting out, Dame sitting out, and not, you know, relying on other people that know the offense to get in the game and be involved. But, again, this is an interesting matchup, but the Portland Trailblazers fall to 5-10 on the season. I wonder if they do make this run and get, you know, in the playoff contention down the road. I know it's early. I know it's the end of November. But just to start throwing that talk out there is interesting in itself. I had another topic that I wanted to get to, but here we go. Okay. So speaking of which, we are talking about Eastern Conference, right? And I'm going to save our Keezy for last because we have been in this kitchen talking about this individual previously, and the last time this went around, our Keezy went off. So I want to save the best for last on this one, because I feel like he could dice this dish up the best. But Nas, I will come to you first. Your thoughts on Joel Embiid, right? They just had a game previously, and he got into another spat / altercation. I won't say fight, but it was almost a fight with one of the Morris twins. And this is going to probably be one of the standing things all season long, can end up running his career long if they can do what we always talk about, or at least myself, I just put it on myself, that how the bad boys back in the 80s and 90s used to do. They would send Mahorn and Lambeer in the game. Lambeer would go cause the hardest foul for one of y'all to start swinging or going crazy so you could get teed up or even worse, get thrown out of the game. Now you got Embiid trash talking and getting into stuff with players and so on and so forth. And now people are coming after Philly still. Like, Philly was one of those secrets. Now, not anymore. And if they feel like either Embiid is getting under people's skin or something happens on the floor, this could work in their favor. But your thoughts on Joel Embiid, I'll say words for last on this one, because I remember how he felt previously with an altercation with Cat.
Yeah, I don't think this is changing as far as, like, his attitudes, like, talking and, like, trying to, you know, hype things up. And I'll put it like this. He's trying to be a guy that he's really not. Okay, like the big mean guy. He's actually not the big mean guy. So a lot of it seems exaggerated. And if you think about it, if you're the other team and he's beefing with one of the Morris twins, hey, how about double ejections? We're all for it if you're the other team. So So, yeah, mm-hmm. he's going to have to get over mm-hmm. this, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. The bigger issue right now in Philly is them figuring out the pecking order, how their offense should run, and what they're actually going to do. Because, honestly, Embiid is suffering in bringing in Horford and really implementing Harris into the offense. Like, Embiid is, and Richardson as well. Embiid is nowhere near as dominant as he was last season. He is drifting out to the three-point line a lot. He's really falling in love with the trail three-pointer. Like, that is more of a problem to me. I really think he needs to calm down a little bit and get back to basics and being one of the few dominant guys in the post left. But he appears to want to be a wing.
Sports City, I do not like the way that Naj be reading my mind. like when he said that he dribbled out the three-point line, it was like I wanted to speak for him, like when he was saying it. Because it's like why this Philly game is annoying. Like I can hear people the way that we grew up, like get your big tail down there. Like there's no need for you to stay up here all game long. And yes, Embiid has the capability to knock down shots, but it's like he'd rather settle for that and let Horford work down there, and Horford wants to step out and shoot the jump shot too. So it's like y'all basically leaving the paint wide open for them to get the defensive rebound and go the other way if y'all not knocking down shots. So that's a whole nother discussion in itself. And just to watch Nas just spice this up even more. And, oh, yeah, Sports City, I have to say this, Ben Simmons hit a three. So it has to be some landmark that people are happy that he finally took a three in a game and knocked it down. But, Royce, I mean, I'll leave the kitchen all to you. I mean, we'll stand around these tables and let you dice this one up. Your thoughts on your big man. And I don't know. I don't really want to bank it on the success moving forward. If you want to, I'll let you dive into it. But your thoughts on Embiid having another altercation on the floor.
Man, first thing I'm going to say is with these trade wins conversations blowing, you know what? You know how I feel about my squad. You heard what I had to say with the situation with Carl Anthony Towns, all that showboating after he felt like he was the bigger man or the tougher guy and it was no big deal. And he was like, yeah, you know, flashing his jersey like Philly and doing the whole little Rocky thing. Well, he just got pumped by Morris. That's what I saw is, one, you got slammed. The smaller guy, and then when you got up, you saw who it was. You ain't really go after him, you know. Not that I want to see on that, but I'm just looking at like, come on, man. You be trolling people. You be acting like you some kind of tough guy, but when you see it, a real Philadelphia native, not somebody who just wear a Philadelphia uniform like you. He was like, pump the brakes. Let me chill. I don't know what's wrong with him. Why you coming after me, Marcus? What are you doing? Marcus is like, I'll knock you out. That's what I'll do. You know what I'm saying? And Marcus was like on some Tony the Tiger. Like, I'm coming for your neck. You know what I'm saying? So all that, man, listen. Joel Embiid can go. Because here's what's going to happen. If they don't trade Joel Embiid, Brett Brown going to get fired because Brett Brown obviously is not – ah, man, I hate to have to attack this man's manhood, but shit, maybe you just ain't coach enough. You know, I don't want to say you ain't man enough, but, look, man, you got to come up with a game plan that's going to work, and you got to be demanding. Ben Simmons can't be drifting in and out of games. You can't, you know, allow this narrative to keep going on like it's a big freaking deal when he takes and makes a three. Like, if that's a part of his game now, let him play it. If you're trying to move Embiid out to the perimeter so Ben and everybody else can slice and dice and get into the paint, then let him be out there and just everybody has to learn, like, that's y'all style of play. But have an identity, you know, from game to game. That's consistent as the Philadelphia 76ers, like, you know, the identity of the Sixers, not, well, this is how we play each opponent, and it varies, you know, in style depending on who we're playing. That's like letting other teams dictate who the hell you are. That's like somebody else trying to tell me who the hell I'm going to be from day to day. You think I'm going to let that happen? Hell no. So these dudes, man, got to get a whole lot in order. Flat out disappointed with where they are currently this season. Flat out disappointed with the performance and the play of Joel Embiid between the ears. I'm not impressed by the box score. I know you got that kind of talent. We expect to see box scores 26 and 13 with the three-pointers, with the blocks, handful of assists and all that. Kudos to Al Horford for being a guy who get the ball at the three-point line, give a guy a fake or put it on the deck and surprise the crap out of multiple defenders and blow right by them and dunk on them. If Embiid was doing that, I'd say hang out around the three-point line. It's all good if you're attacking the rack, but if you're going to be slow, if you're going to be methodical, if you're going to, you know, try to create stress and drama, I mean, look, come on, man, nobody needs that headache. I said it last year. I'll say it again. If Philadelphia doesn't win the championship with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid this season, this will be the final season of Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons together in Philadelphia. I know they just paid them. I know. But somebody got to go because it doesn't seem like it wants to work. Now, you can blame who you want to blame with all of that, but if you're going to be a bully, then you got to be a bully every game. You know what I'm saying? If you want to try to beat Charles Oakley, you better beat Charles Oakley. If you ain't Charles Oakley, then listen, don't beat Lambeer because Lambeer got banged out. You know what I'm saying? Don't beat Lambeer. Don't beat Lambeer. You know what I'm saying? So you better study your history and figure out, like, who do I want to be, who am I going to be, and then be that. If you're not a tough guy, shut your mouth and play ball and be dominant as in that fashion. But understand, once you be quiet, everybody's going to come for you now because they're going to think you're a punk. So you got to be mentally strong. You got to be tough. You got to be hella dominant. You got to hold your ground. But all in all, outside of Sixers, what we've been seeing with the physicality in the play in the league, dear NBA, I have an absolute problem with you because you're allowing your officials to suck on their whistle and they're not being held accountable. I know what it is to wear stripes. I know what it is to see these guys who are the NBA stars of today when they were on the circuit. In AAU, grassroots basketball, Adidas Gauntlet, the Uprising, Under Armour tournaments, Nike EYBL, all that stuff. Your very same player. And I know if you let that BS go on off the ball, under the basket, unchecked, without a double whistle, being assessed to the two players involved, if you're not going to talk to those guys, if you're not going to text those guys, these dudes are out here playing basically in their mind, fighting for their life. And so they will take matters into their own hands. You know it. I know it. You've been running this business for a long time now. And what I'm seeing happening, y'all letting it happen. And I'm calling you out, and I'm saying it's bullshit. Stop it. Blow your damn whistle. Clean it up. Stop putting us out here, meaning those players who look like me, sound like me, come from where I come from, and then y'all want to, like, it's just something to talk about. Like, y'all need content. So you're going to turn basketball into football or boxing? These are basketball players. These dudes ain't boxers. They're not wrestlers. They chose to be professional basketball players. So treat them as such, and anybody that want to put on a whistle and be a ref, be a professional ref. If you ain't got no balls, you ain't got no heart, you ain't got no courage, if you won't blow your damn whistle when it matters most, hang your damn whistle up, period.
Yep. But they are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Have to give a shout-out, rest in peace.
You are so...
I had to do it. I'm sorry. I had to. Rest in peace.
It was a perfect soundbite.
I had to. But I feel where Royce is coming from. But finally, instead of him breaking up other teams and my team himself, I don't even want to say he's looking at it as a fan. He's being analytical, too. I think it's a lot of pressure to put on them to get to a championship and then win it, too, because I feel like there is something there. I think they, knowing that they're all young, and this is the same recipe. I'm glad we're in the kitchen, too, looking at Oklahoma City, not knowing what they have, man. And shout out to the people that made this song first. I'm thinking of the Janet Jackson version. You don't know what you got till it's gone. You got rid of James Harden when he was 20 years old, and look at him. He's been able to attain an NBA MVP and help lead the Rockets. Like, don't watch this happen. Knowing that you got talent there that could build into something and make them build a legacy, I could just imagine if that Thunder team stayed together. And looking at Philadelphia, I obviously, and I don't want to poke fun or point the fingers, but I don't think that's the right coach running the show. I don't believe in Brett Brown winning a championship. I don't think he's a championship caliber team. He's probably one of those cool, to me, he's a cool coach. He's a people and player coach. Let me say it the right way. He's a player's coach. Like, they can go to him and talk to him about stuff. He's easy going. He's you know, like, he get riled up in front of a ref or in front of the crowd or in front of a reporter. But to the players, I feel like he you know, he vibes for them. And I don't think that they have that mojo going right now as being a championship winner. Like, yeah, I feel like they can compete in the East. I feel like they can beat any team in the league because they have pieces that can match up. But I'm at a loss in this situation. I want to see how you guys, Royce already said how he feels about it. Now, do you think that they can get to NBA final? Like, do you think they have the capability to get there? I can say Eastern Conference.
They have to. That's what the team is built for. You are not building towards. You are built to win right now. That's why you brought in Richardson. And look, Joel Embiid is an all-time great talent. We don't know if he's going to be an all-time great player. And the injury history and the other question marks and stuff Royce brought up is why the possibility of him being traded is even something that, you know, there's something that could happen. His talent alone, he should be untouchable. But the injury profile and the situation Royce just talked about, where you're talking about Ben, look, this is what happened this past summer. Most people won't even go into this, but this is what happened this past summer. They passed on a more talented player in Jimmy Butler and didn't offer him the full deal to give the money to Harris. Why did they give the money to Harris? Because if Joel gets hurt and you have Al Horford and Harris as your 4 or 5 and Simmons as your star, you can still contend. You can still compete. So they are already, like, built to where, okay, we have to put in an emergency if Joel's, you know, some of his injuries act up, we lose him for the season. So they're already built to sustain a blow of losing Joel, and they get a bounty back for Joel. Like, look, if they put Joel on trading block, the calls would be nonstop, and they get almost anything that they want because Joel's that good. But everything Royce just laid out, like, look, they could become a Ben Simmons-centric team or a Joel-centric team. Right now, they're a Joel-centric team. And if that doesn't work, they're going to go with option 2. And they already got the pieces in place to make it happen. And that's why they stayed versatile this summer. Like, a lot of people didn't understand that Horford sign or the Harris sign. But you look at it from that standpoint, and you can kind of see how it makes sense. Because, of course, Jimmy Butler's better than Harris. We know that. But if you're trying to keep yourself fluid, you see the kind of move you would make.
And when you look at this team, Timeless, I mean, look, you know these my guys, man. Look, but being a contender and not a pretender, I got to ratchet up my expectation or how I view the work of what you have done this particular season. And who are they beating convincingly that is a fellow contending team? In a year in which you have to get to the finals, okay? Win or lose it, but you have to get there. You have to get there. And then so you must attack this season, which is the problem of in my opinion now, the presence of one Joel Embiid. See, when it first went down a few seasons ago with Philadelphia and Boston, I'm watching them come out against Boston like we better and we know it, but we ain't got to prove it. Like we could just hit the switch and turn it on and ain't nothing y'all going to be able to do about it. And then Boston just commenced to whooping that ass. So what, you bounced back last year, but you had a tough time. Every game, every series that Philadelphia is projected to win, they struggle. That's a problem. When you got Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler or not, Tobias Harris, now Josh Richardson, at Al Horford, minus J.J. Redick, at Furkan Korkmaz, whoever, Matisse Thybulle, like with this version, you got to find a way to consistently play at a high level. There has to be a pecking order, and they and now I'm gonna step the lever up one more notch, and I'm gonna take it from Brett Brown, and I know Elm Brand just got there as GM, but you're the GM, and I don't care when you got there. You're there now. You're in the seat, and you know what's going on. And as a former NBA ball player, a number one overall draft pick. You know what I'm saying? A baller. He carried a team. Okay, so you got to make the decision. Elton, you got to choose, man, Joel or Ben. And I honestly think that Elton, low-key, has made the decision because Nas just laid it out. It's perfect to go with Ben over Joel at this point. It just makes business sense. And so this might not be the actual time or the moment, but I stand by what I feel like my eyes are seeing around this league, that trade winds are blowing. Teams have to step up and make deals. Deals need to be made, and some people need to, you know, adjust it and tweak it, or they're going to fall flat on their face. And it just be work they got to do in the summer. Now, if that's what they want to do, they want to save it for summer conversation, then, hey, do what you do. But you're going to miss an opportunity.
I want Ryan. Okay. I want Bradley Beal. And I want two first-rounders. And we make the salaries work with whatever other pieces we got to do. If I'm moving somebody like Joel, I got to get a premium package. And to me, that's what that is.
Interesting stuff. Look at these. Well, I'm telling you, they ready. Fully equipped CD changer with the cell. Okay. Here goes another topic. I'm going to give you an hors d'oeuvre first before I get to the topic that I really want to get to. But I want to see. And this is kind of like quick draw. Y'all don't have to be quick about it. Y'all can analyze too, right? Between three teams that I have outside of the top eight teams in the Eastern Conference. I'm going to do the Eastern Conference because I didn't really set this scenario up in the Western Conference. But what team out of these three teams that I'm going to mention do you think that can build success from where they are now and become a team that we talk about down the road? The Bulls, the Hornets, or the Pistons? Which one of these teams do you think can make a run and make it interesting down the road? Royce, I'll come to you first.
Let's see, knee-jerk reaction right now. I'm going to go Chicago Bulls.
Interesting. I like
it. Yeah. I'll let Nas get his off. I won't go into the reasons why just yet, unless you want to run it back, send it back around.
We go further down the list. I'll go with Bulls first, too. Let's go Bulls at one. My second choice might surprise y'all.
Okay, no, well, give me a second choice because I kind of like multiple choices. So say how you feel. I mean, who would be the second pick that you're thinking of, or if you want to enter another team into it? I chose it because this is the reason why I said the Pistons, because they got Blake back, but they're losing. But here goes the interesting part, that Derrick Rose has been playing some good ball, but they have a bad record. I'm wondering if they could pull themselves out of this ditch that they're in right now. The Hornets, they had a good start, but now they're starting to slowly slide. I don't know if they turn this around or not, but that's why I put the Hornets in there. The Bulls are interesting in itself because they have a lot of good players there that I don't want to say they're not being mentioned because they do get mentioned, but they're five games under 500 themselves. And I'm a Lauri Markkanen fan. I like Lauri. I'm an Otto Porter fan. Both of these guys know why I'm an Otto fan. Kobe has been doing his thing out there. Kobe has been a talent out of North Carolina. He's unconscious when he's shooting that three ball. Like, he believes in that shot for real. So, and Zach LaVine, if he can stay healthy and make that leap from, like, the doorstep of stardom, and if he wants to be a superstar, that's what's in front of Zach LaVine. So I feel like at least the Hornets, Bulls, and Pistons are three teams I feel like in the Eastern Conference that are below the eighth seed can make this interesting down the road. That's why I did that.
All right. Let me get it real quick. Okay. In that scenario, last place is the Detroit Pistons. They're built to be a playoff team, but the roster is so mismatched that it's going to be hard to get that done along with Blake's injury. You got DeAndre's contract situation up in the air. You're capped out, and you don't have much young talent that people want. You got a glut of guards that are basically all the same, Galloway, Brown, those guys. And then you got Derrick Rose, who's not a future piece. He's a right-now piece. So Detroit is in the worst condition. Charlotte, who I would say is the surprise, is number two, is because two of their draft picks have worked out in a way nobody expected. And I'm talking Dwayne Bacon. And what's my man's name? Graham, the other guard. They're ahead of the curve in their rebuild because these guys are much better than everybody else in the NBA thought they were. They're playing quality minutes right now. They're giving them what they need. And, like, this is a full rebuild, and you already got two pieces that you like. And you can decide whether you're going to, you know, re-sign them or you move them or whatever you do. But these are two pieces who have value. You're going to move along from a lot of the guys on your roster. But Washington and Bacon and those guys, like Rozier, of course, is overpaid. But, man, you're going to bump Rozier out of there in a few years. But as of right now, you're cap-friendly. You got a young team. And going forward, things look good as long as you steer the ship in the right direction. Don't let Mike on that phone. Keep Michael Jordan away from that phone, and you're fine.
Yeah. So, I mean, look. Great minds think alike once again, you know, working from the bottom up. There's nothing in Detroit. Yeah, we're not even going to talk about that because Nas, you eulogized them already so eloquently. When it comes to the Charlotte Hornets, man, look, the only reason I didn't put them number one is because we still have, like, Tyler Zeller. He doesn't fit going forward. Rozier's already, I think, 29 or 30, so he doesn't have, like, really a future ahead of him. But everybody else, Devontae Graham, Miles Bridges, Malik Monk, Dwayne Bacon, P.J. Washington, right? You got four or five good pieces hitting in the right direction, and they've committed already to basically development, meaning we're not saying we're developing the player and we only give him 15, 10, 8 minutes. No. These guys are getting 30, 35, 34, 37 minutes a game. Dudes are on the floor. They are the guys getting the stats, win or lose. They even still have old head Marvin Williams, you know what I'm saying, hanging around, Nicholas Batum and others. But they're getting paid to mentor, to give them conversation, and somebody to go against in practice, but they're not the guys getting the minutes anymore. That's exactly what Chicago needs to do. Now, however, I got Chicago number one because their young talent is ahead of Charlotte. It's right. Somewhat of a household name in terms of value. You know, if you just say Zach LaVine, dunk champion, like, that puts them ahead of Charlotte. My problem with Chicago, Nas, I mean, confirm this for me, man. Is it just me? But sometimes when you turn on the TV and you watch the Chicago Bulls, it just seems like I'm just looking at some kind of Michael Jordan-less, Scottie Pippen-less, no Phil Jackson having, no Horace Grant, Dennis Rodman rebounding version of the Chicago Bulls. And I'm like, damn, how y'all skip the Bulls of Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah. You know what I'm saying? And y'all fall all the way back to what I'm seeing, and then I realized it hit me like, oh, damn, four, what's his name?
Garth Ford and Paxton.
Yeah. Like, you dudes got to get out of the house. I mean, look, man, let what happened in Mike Jordan's glory years, his decade, let it go. Boylan,
yeah,
whoever's going to be the head coach, man, it got to be flat out Kobe out there next to Zach LaVine, next to Lauri Markkanen. I mean, you got to go ahead and roll Porter because he's still young enough right now, but you got to hurry up and get him out there. But if you're dealing with injuries, then you move along and you play big, long guys, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., and Daniel Gafford.
Yep.
Get him on the floor right now. Get him exposure. Get him development, and just run with it, man. Win or lose. So I like Chicago.
Right.
I don't like how they're using their youth because they got plenty of youth. You got Chris Dunn. He's a thief. I think he's averaging 2.5, almost 3 steals a game. He's still not a great, you know, consistent, reliable shooter, but he has his moments. They picked up Satoransky. I mean, I like the Chicago team. It's just not yielding a whole lot of wins because I don't think they got the right coach, and I don't think they have the right management team. It's time to move on in Chicago.
And Arshinago, or however you pronounce his name, should never be on the floor unless three people get
Archie
hurt.
Diacono?
Like, he should never
be on the floor.
That is crazy that dude is eating up minutes and you're not playing Satoransky the majority of the minutes, who should be bringing on Kobe. And bringing Kobe along and getting him to understand how to run an offense as opposed to just being a three-point shooter. But like you said, they got so many dead minutes on the court every game because it's like these guys aren't going to be there going forward. These are your trade deadline, you know, assets that you're going to dangle in front of people. Like, they know what they can do already. You don't have to give them the minutes. Give them to the young boys.
Yeah. These are today's NBA shot callers. They not as bright as they used to be.
Right.
Okay.
But you're in a full rebuild. Like, stop playing. Oh, my bad, Tyler.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's fine. Just back away from the dish. Back away from the dish because I'm putting plays down. Now, this one that I'm about to throw out here, right, we do not talk about this guy at all. Like, I'm, like, stunned myself because I do want to give him credit in the way that he's been playing as of late. He's been awesome. You're starting to hear more people try to say about him being a star of yesteryear. But I like the way that he's got out the gate thus far, and he has pieces around him. And the player that I'm talking about is Luka Doncic. And a lot of people are, you know, saying that the players that are going up against him and after the game, how much credit people are giving him. He just had a 40-point triple-double game as well. Knowing that he's in the West, knowing that he has people around him, i.e. the unicorn, a.k.a. Porzingis. He also has Dwight Powell with him as well. I mean, you guys' thoughts on Luka Doncic and the phenom and everything that comes along with him. He is the price of admission, if you will. I want to see how you guys feel about the star. If y'all want to give him superstar, well, I don't know where we go with this one. But Luka Doncic is on the table. I'll start with you first, Nas.
Yeah, Luka is everything he was advertised to be. I did not think he would live up to that billing, but he's proven me wrong on that. I thought he would be solid, fringe all-star, but he's proven himself to be not only really tough to deal with off the dribble, but he has a pacing about himself. And this is what I call like with Harden, when you're dealing with Harden. It's like his heartbeat is off rhythm, and it makes you look silly in trying to stay in front of him because he just has this really awkward, jerky way of moving, and that gives him the space to shoot as much as he wants. That gives him space to, you know, dish as much as he does. So Luka is really good. This is really early in the season. I'm hearing people talking about MVP, like, pipe down. No, we're not ready for that yet. He's not going to dominate the league and win MVP. And notice how when you went through the talent around him, the second name you said was Dwight Powell. So, no, they're not a title contender. No, he's not going to win MVP, but he's going to be an all-star starter, and he is a superstar
Globally, the NBA is going to love putting him on every piece of material they can, as not only an influence to other people who think growing up that they can't play in the NBA because they're not black, but because they got a superstar who looks like them. And that's going to be very important as part of Luka's career. The officiating he gets is kind of suspect. I've never seen a young player get as many calls as he does, but yeah, Luka's the real deal, man. Some Atlanta Hawks fans are pulling their hair out right now. Even though they're happy with Trae Young, some people are really disappointed when they're seeing this run that Luka has been on lately. And I've never seen Rick Carlisle keep a player in the game in a blowout to pad their stats to a triple-double. I've never seen that. So the organization is fully on board with Luka stardom. Like, they are going to go hard for this. But, yeah, man, love them. Really hard to defend, and he's going to give people buckets all year.
Well, before I throw it to Royce, Tracy McGrady is saying he is the best point guard in the league. Just FYI.
Just remember what size suit Tracy McGrady used to wear and consider his judgment.
Okay. I'll let him see people that one. Okay. Royce, your thoughts on Luka? Anything that you'd like to add or spice or negate away from the situation? Do you agree with T-Mac? Do you think he's the best point guard in the league, or do you enter another name as well?
I'm not concerned with whether or not he's the best point guard in the league at this point. My mind was already headed down another path. But Luka is exactly, you know, what I said last year after watching his rookie campaign. And then seeing what he's doing again, and Nas is correct. Look, the NBA, the referees, everybody is full out, all on board with the success of Luka Doncic in the NBA because it's going to mean more bucks for the entire league. That being said, that's why we're seeing stuff like what Nas mentioned. For the first time, we're watching a guy like Carlisle is like, hey, go ahead back out there. It's a blowout. Get your numbers, boy. It's okay. But, I don't like it. Hey, if you want to gamble with his health and his career, like, you know, because freak accidents happen, all for, you know, some triple-doubles, then, hey, do what y'all got to do. I get it. Everybody sometimes get greedy. You see all this money flying around, fantasy sports, betting on games, so forth and so on. You could bet on somebody's stats and blah, 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 blah. Like, hey, man, dudes better recognize this ain't basketball of the 70s, 80s, 90s, or the early 2000s. This is altogether a whole nother form of entertainment. It just looks like basketball, and we've been chugging along expecting it to be the basketball that we grew up on. And I'm here to remind everybody every chance I get, man, game has changed. It's not what it used to be. But Luka Doncic is, in a sense, he's LeBron. He's the foreign LeBron. And what I mean by that is he came in at 19 years old last season, came in with great expectation, maybe not domestically, right? But far as the NBA is concerned, he came in with great expectation. He's flat out lived up to it. Whether they helped him or not with a few calls here and there, he still had to take and make shots, and he did. He still had to find open teammates or find a way to get the ball to a teammate who wasn't quite open, but he could get the ball in there, and he did. And so, barring injuries, man, this guy having Porzingis next to him for, let's say, at least the next, what? Porzingis is only, what, 23, 24? Not older than 25. So, I mean, with health on their side, you're talking about
that's crazy.
10 years. I mean, these dudes could rock a decade out. You know what I mean? They could do a Mike and Scotty if they wanted to in terms of how long they get to play next to one another. Doesn't mean that I expect them to actually win championships together. I don't know that that will happen. But is Luka Doncic as good as they say he is at this point? Yeah. And I said last year I thought that he could be the best foreign player. Basically, he's coming for Dirk's throne. So Dirk better enjoy his years on the throne while Luka plant.
Right.
And shoot, man, this is year two for Luka. By year five, they'd be like, yeah, man, Dirk was, but Dirk didn't have this, and Dirk didn't have that, and Dirk couldn't do this, and Dirk couldn't do that. But in my opinion, Dirk is the best, I guess you could say foreign. Yeah, anyway, let me get up out of there.
I already know that mind started racing to Hakeem, and you got nervous.
Right, that's what I was about to say, too. That's what I was really about to say. Here's the thing.
You know how people play. I don't like it, and I didn't want to do it because it was going on, like, the background, you know, the white noise in my head was, you know, basically, you know, best foreign, basically white player or looks white, but not white.
Right, he just looks white.
He's not white. He just looks white. I say again, he's not white. He just looks white. And so when people start talking about basketball and basketball players, it's just a natural assumption for a lot of people listening, whether they be actually black or white, foreign or domestic, that, you know, anything that's brown or colored or black is supposed to be from America. Unless they go on record and actually say it, right? But again,
right,
we got to get away from the whole color wheel. And if we just talk about the fact that this guy is from Slovenia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is he the best? Is he the best Slovenian ever in the NBA?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Already, we can say it like that. Is Dirk the best German ever in the NBA?
Already.
Hands down, and he probably will be forever. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I'm not saying any more dope German players coming because we got Dennis Schroeder. He's from Germany.
Sorry,
but he
Dennis,
just don't
right.
look like
Sorry,
Dirk.
Dennis.
You know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, Hakeem, you know, look, you know where he's from. He's from the continent of Africa, but then you got to call out his country. People
mm-hmm.
don't want to take that time and do that, unfortunately. So everybody just starts breaking stuff down and creating all, you know, where we live, man. You know, black and white. Yeah, all right. And again, I back out, man. You back out, son. Come on, y'all. Don't come for me. I backed out.
I didn't push that envelope. I just wanted to talk about Luka. I didn't push that envelope at all, believe me.
Man, y'all start throwing around King Olajuwon and stuff like I ain't know what I was talking about. Like, I don't know.
No,
dream,
no,
boy.
Wait,
hold on,
wait,
man.
I heard somebody.
That was me. That was me being messy because I knew Royce didn't want to dive into that. Into that,
right,
what would you call it?
I ain't want to get into that color bag, color wheel.
Right.
I didn't even know. I didn't think it was going to go that way.
But I kind of felt like, I don't know if y'all ever seen the movie Color Purple, but when Miss Philly came upstairs with that tray of food and she brought it to Suge and she said, I'm going to sit here and see how it happened. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I was
yeah.
waiting to see what Nas did. Nas brought the food upstairs,
no,
and I want to see if you
don't but hold on, man. If we're having that conversation in a real way, we go back to Royce's sensibility. What does Royce normally say when we start talking about top five and top this and comparison and this? We talk about two Hall of Famers, two of the best to ever do it, Dream and Dirk. It doesn't really matter where they are on your damn pecking order of who's the best. It doesn't matter. It's two all-time
right.
greats. Two of the best to ever do it. So, you know what I mean? I was just being messy, messing with Royce. But overall,
oh, yeah, we've been,
what Royce said is correct, man.
I didn't want that smoke to be set up. I just wanted to see how you guys were impressed with the way that the 20-year-old Luka Doncic has been taking care of business thus far with the Dallas Mavericks team. And it's crazy that Royce threw that out there. I wasn't even really thinking about it. Luka's 20. Porzingis is 24. Like, these dudes, at least, if Dallas does this right, at least 6 to 8 years. Like, if they can play 6 to 8 years together, they have to find a championship one way or another in the next 6 to 8 years. Like, they are that young.
And if they put the right pieces around them, Thomas, if they put the right pieces around them, it won't be 6, 7, 8 years like Dame and CJ.
Right. All facts. Because those are two number three players as far as the pecking order. And let me say this, man. Say whatever you want to say, like, you know, dealing with these guys. But somewhere, Rajon Rondo is watching Luka be given the keys to the offense and not get plays yelled at him every 2 seconds And Rajon is furious after dealing with Rick Carlisle for that one season.
But, I mean, Rondo's in a good situation right now. He's in the Lakers right now.
Rajon Rondo too smart for his own good, man. And he don't got
facts.
No discipline with his mouth.
Facts. Facts. Facts.
Okay, I'm going to leave them alone because I was going to pick on Golden State because they have another injury or two right now, but I'm going to leave them alone. The last one I'm going to go out the door with is on the Los Angeles Lakers. I want to see how you guys feel about the Lakers at this point in time. With them sitting on top of the league, putting this together, they are not fully healthy, and they're still playing good ball right now. And it just feels like a turn of the leaf or whatever, however you look at it. Last year they were one of the worst stories in the league, and I used to just try to, you know, throw it out there, see how they were going to put it together. And now it's like everybody can't wait to see the Lakers show. And it's coming from either AD or Bron or somebody else that you can insert into the conversation. But now they're getting it. They're slowly putting it together. And Vogel, you were the coach that I was calling out, so I give you some credit. I don't know if should give some credit to Kidd or Collins because your bench is involved too. But I want to see how you guys feel about this Lakers show as it currently stands on November 21st. Royce, I'll start with you first. Your thoughts on the Lakers show.
Well, this is exactly what I expected when they signed Anthony Davis. This is LeBron James and this Anthony Davis. Pick your poison. There's nothing you can do about it. They're the best damn duo in the league. So any other duo is just a duo. I don't care if it's Kawhi and Paul George, Damon, CJ, Luka, and Porzingis, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid, Giannis and Chris Middleton. Stop playing, bro. This is the king. LeBron James, okay? LeBron James and the brow. Anthony Davis, you talking about MVP candidates, okay? They know who Big Brother and Little Brother is. They know that Little Brother going to carry Big Brother. Big Brother going to do what Big Brother do. He going to direct traffic all around the court. You know what I'm saying? He going to tell you you wrong, even though he wrong. He going to say he right, even though you right. You understand what I'm saying, man? Like, it is what it is. And they cool with it. And it's working. And as long as these two transcendent players stay healthy, there will not be another team that transcends like they do. Period. That's my thoughts. I'm done. He gone.
Nah, your thoughts on the Lakers show as they are doing business. And I was talking to Royce outside of the kitchen and saying, well, when the markets come, they're going to have an interesting situation because they're going to have three bigs that they can go in and out of the game with. With DeMarcus, Dwight.
DeMarcus may never DeMarcus may
again?
Never dress for this team. DeMarcus may never dress for this team. the two-headed monster of JaVale and Dwight is good enough to carry them. And the off-the-court problems and the physical health of DeMarcus, not to mention when you start talking about chemistry, when you got something good, it's hard to add something to it. We may never see DeMarcus play with this version of the Lakers, man, honestly. They're deep at every position and getting healthier. Kyle Kuzma is still a chess piece that they're going to figure out how to use even better. KCP and Danny Green and those guys aren't great players, but they're good pieces around, like he talked about, that dynamic duo, man. So, yeah, they got a perfect team. Vogel's really good at teaching defensive schemes and deciding what they're going to do. He got to watch his back because Jason Kidd will try to take his job. But overall, man, this is just, you know, this is how you build a championship contender. When you start off with LeBron and AD, I mean, you're just filling in the names after that. It's not really difficult. But, yeah, we're going to see, man. If healthy, them against anybody, man. I have a hard time seeing anybody beat them four times out of seven.
the Clippers are the only team I feel can give them a problem. Four games out of seven. That's the only team. I don't know how to feel about it.
Hold on, Timeless. Hold on. Now I'm pissed off at my boys, and I want to see them write that shit. But the Philadelphia 76ers are properly constructed, that with the right attitude and health, they can get four games. I think they can. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying they better. I'm not saying that they have in name value that which is equal to LeBron James and Anthony Davis. But in size, and I think in depth, they can match up. Now, advantage to the Lakers when it comes to the coaching staff. And the only thing that can mess up what they got going in the coaching, Nas hit on the head. You got somebody chomping at the bit, sitting over on one seat to the left. They want to sit in the head chair. That could mess that whole thing up. So, Vogel, watch your back, baby. You know how we do it. You know, Pacers for life. But yeah, don't count us out, Thomas. Don't count us out, brother. That's all I'm saying.
Y'all are probably the team they would least like to see coming out of the East, honestly, just because of the size, because you're one of the few teams that can actually match up size-wise. So, yeah, I would agree with that. It would be difficult. But if I'm putting money down, I'm still leaning towards them as the favorites just because they got that hammer, man. And that's LeBron James when it comes to closing time in the playoffs. And, you know, we've got some people like, say what you want to say, man. Jimmy had to kind of throw ice water on some guys in Philly last year when the playoffs started because they didn't understand that everything turns up a few levels. And Jimmy had to say, hey, man, you're scared. Stop it. This is the playoffs. You got to step it up. And Jimmy had to do that against Brooklyn. So that would be one area I'm a little wary of. Y'all remember.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And that's why I said, man, they got to get it right between the ears. Stop playing like privilege, you know, AAU traveling ball players.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how they talk,
right.
Man. That's how they look to me. And I'm saying, like, yo, you hella talented. I'm forced that if you on my team, I got to play you because, you know, your talent is what it is. But, damn, you ain't listening, boy.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that hammer that is LeBron James and his experience and the type of student that he is, man. Yeah, look, anytime that you could take down a record-setting organization and team 73-9 and you could send them home without the Larry O'Brien trophy, yep, I'm with you, Nas. I get it. I completely understand.
Yeah, look. It's going to be good, man. This is the best we've seen just because we don't have that Golden State super team kind of hanging over the league. Like, as much as I'm
saying
the Lakers are the favorites, I could see, like just Royce just pointed out, I could see a way for Philly to beat them. I could see, like the time I said earlier, a way for the Clippers to beat them. So they're not overwhelming favorites like we've had in the past couple of years.
Right. And
yeah.
You know,
no disrespect to Milwaukee, that's 12-3. Sorry, I didn't mean to disrespect.
Right.
I think they just played their fourth home game or something like that.
Yeah.
Five of them
right.
Now. My bad. No disrespect. 12-3. I see you.
With young Dante starting because Middleton's hurt, still winning.
Yeah, we were actually talking about Dante before the show started too. Just how stuff goes around this kitchen, man. You play with your fill. You'll get beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, ham, corn, lard. I don't know. If you guys have something, I had the Rockets if you wanted to. Or otherwise, we could close out because we are at the 90-minute mark, and believe me, we just ate through that 90 minutes real quickly, too. But
let me get a quick one in because I want to hear what y'all think of this. Now, I'm not trying to make one NBA game like a season or anything like that, but what I saw last night was the Denver Nuggets tell James Harden, we're not going to allow you to play erratic junior college three-point ball. We're going to double, trap, force the ball out of your hands and make you make plays for other people and make you be effective enough as a distributor to beat us. Can other contenders do this to them? Because that was real. Like, I seen Harden back down from that challenge last night. This is just my, you know, my opinion, so I want to get your opinion on that.
Well, I'll jump in real quick, Nas, and I'll be honest and go on record and say I'm going to get to that game because I didn't get to it last night. I've been playing with my DJ equipment, you know what I mean? And I just got – just keeping it real, being honest. But, look, man, I definitely trust your eye and what you've seen. That being the case, personnel is important. I don't know that other teams or other contenders have the type of personnel that Denver has. I mean, without even seeing that game, I noticed Denver roster from having a multitude of their players on various fantasy teams. And you got I think you have the right type of team in terms of defensive minded length. Switchability, if you will, and then you got enough offensive firepower to make it a difficult contest for the Rockets. So maybe Milwaukee could attempt to do similar things, but I don't know who else really is young enough when you talk about like top to bottom. Outside of Paul Millsap, there's really not much age on that Denver team. And so you still got some young guys who got some significant amount of fuel in their tank, and that line is above half. You know what I'm saying? It's still at least three quarters full. where a lot of rosters in the NBA, I mean, they're trying to go young, but as far as the contenders, some of those contending teams, I mean, they have tank and quarter tank. They ain't got it like that. So I think Denver just might be the only team to send that significant message and say, you know what, guys, y'all had y'all run. I know y'all think y'all going to do something, but you don't want to play us. You better find you somewhere else to fit inside the top eight. You don't want to see us in round one because it's going to be ugly.
Boy, it's crazy.
What'd you think?
Man, I don't know. I feel a certain way about Denver because it's like the secret still hasn't been told on them. They'll beat you with whoever is in that roster. And they're sitting at number two again in the Western Conference. So I like it. And don't get me wrong. Like, I love Harden when he was with the Thunder. When he went to Houston, I wanted to see him be successful. But then at a point, it's like he always banks on trying to get to the rim and draw some type of contact and flail. This is something that they focused and honed in on to keep him clean and not get him started at the free throw line. I think that's probably one of the best scenarios that you could come up with. But you got to get a reliable defender to start off the defensive presence and then help any which lane he's trying to come to, just help. You know, that's the best way that I can see it.
Yes, sir. But, yeah, check it out when y'all get a chance, man. I think he only got up like 8 threes and, running people off the three-point line. Y'all know the emphasis coaches in the NBA are screaming about that. So, yeah, check it out.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. Keezy, you have anything? Or we can start shut down shop here if you like.
Man, you can start shutting it down, but I ain't bring nothing to the table. I just brought my fork and my knife and my hot sauce. I was just ready to eat. You know what I'm saying? I was just keeping it real. I was honest, man. I got some Serato and Pioneer DJ. You know what I mean? We can talk about that. You know what I'm saying? Coming soon, DJ Royce. Let's go.
Yes, sir. That's what's up, man. The one thing I wish I had learned to do when I hung around DJs when I was a kid, I wish I had learned to spin. It's dope.
We are at the tail end of the show, and it even got the Rockets out of me. I wanted to talk a little junk about Golden State because I don't want to say that anybody's taking injuries, but they are getting injured left and right.
But we can laugh at that franchise, though, can't we? As arrogant as that franchise laughing. Was
I'm not
the
laughing.
Last couple of years,
I'm not laughing.
As much as
man,
they aired
them
called
out.
Us,
aired
they
them
knew more
out.
Than everybody else, and they had a strategic advantage because their front
Let's
office
go.
Was they better
led.
Than everybody
Ooh,
else. 13. Nah. When I pull up the score and I see them losing 75-43 and some of these scores I've seen over the past week, I'm laughing. I'm going to enjoy dancing on their grave because they was real arrogant when they was on top. But y'all know how this game of basketball goes, man. These dynasties are short-lived.
Right.
And when it goes bad,
right.
as the baby Bulls just tell you from the early 2000s, it goes real
right.
bad. So I'm going to enjoy laughing at them all season. Come back, Steph. I want to see you sweat and take these L's. Come back, Draymond. I want to see you barking at people as y'all taking these L's. Yeah, I'm loving it.
No. You see, man, listen. You see Draymond face on them national televised games. He don't even look like the same player. You know what I mean? He look like he in the days. He look like. Damn it, man. Am I dreaming? Somebody, please wake me up. This can't be my life. You know what I'm saying? He's shaking his head like, man, the Bulls are here.
Easy to shoot up when you're kicking everybody in the teeth. Now, when it's your turn to get kicked in the teeth, how hard is it to put that uniform on every night and go out there and give your all when you know more than likely you're going to get embarrassed? That's tough, man. That's character. That's tough.
Man. this is the scenario I'd be set up with, people. This is what I'd be set up with. But I need plugs out from the club. Let me finish. I need a close out from the two of you. Plugs and close out anything that you guys would like to promote. You know what? I'll start with you first, Nas. Anything that you'd like to promote or shout out? The floor is yours.
Shout out to Sports City Chefs, man. Good show. Always good to talk to other like-minded people who really love this game and appreciate the things that we miss from the way the old game was played, but also appreciative of some of the things these young dudes are doing that we've never seen before. And, you know, give these boys their flowers, man. Like, don't be so caught up in your favorite team from the 90s or – a certain superstar who you don't want to be eclipsed because that's your prime years and you want to have nostalgia and not let these young folks enjoy what they're seeing in front of them. So, you know, this game, this league, man, I love it, dude. So always good talking to y'all, man.
You already know we got the brother. Okay,
Marquise,
you already know what to do. You already know what to do right about now. Yeah, your fault. Look at you. Your fault. Stay seated in the kitchen, please.
Yeah, man, I'm just ready to, you know, shout out to these, what's that, from NBA Finals to the worst record in the NBA at this very moment, sitting at 3-13, dead last in the NBA. Shout out to the Golden State Warriors. I don't want to hear no excuses. I don't care if Kevin Durant left. I don't care if Klay Thompson got hurt. I don't care if Steph Curry got hurt. I don't care if Draymond Green missed games. I don't care if Sean Livingston retired. I don't care if you traded Andre Iguodala, DeMarcus Cousins, Quinn Cook, and everybody else. It don't matter. Y'all at the bottom. Now dig your damn way out. That's how you play basketball.
Wow. They are relaxing hype. I don't even understand how they're doing it right now. They showing themselves out, boy. I tell you that, man. Well, I'm gonna close out Sports City, man. You already know we will be back here tomorrow with the Aaron and Timeless show, and the Sunday morning brunch will be taking place on Sunday as well. You already know how to go down Sports City, man. I had a great show with my brothers, man. Good, bad, and indifferent, but we did agree a lot. And oh yes. Royce is breaking up the Sixers, finally. Instead of him breaking up everybody else's team, and B, keep acting up.
keep acting up, Embiid. I want you to keep acting up. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Quick, quick, old land, the whole shebang, nigga, fuck the bullshit. I meant this ever relentless for dropping.